First time.
Without further ado,
WBSM presents The Barry Richards Show. Streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Text us using app chat on the WBSM app. Now, The Barry Richards Show.
All righty, welcome back out of the program. It is 1:09 on a Thursday afternoon, and White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt is about to brief from the White House, and this comes as the situation in Iran intensifies, and also the president is due to address the nation tonight at 9 o'clock. And so we're going to pop in just a couple of seconds as soon as she approaches the microphones, and we'll get to we'll get the opening statement, at least from Caroline Leavitt, and see what's on the mind of the White House this afternoon. In the meantime, the smoke is starting to filter back into our region, and you can see the sun slowly giving way to the haze and into the smoky conditions. Again, as you probably heard by now, our bright and brilliant Massachusetts Attorney General, Andrea Joy Campbell, is blaming President Trump for the smoke. And Mass Daily News reported actually yesterday afternoon, Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Joy Campbell is really out here on Facebook trying to convince the Commonwealth that Donald Trump made the sky turn yellow. In a post Wednesday afternoon on her official taxpayer-funded page, Campbell wrote, quote, "Have you seen the hazy yellow skies above Massachusetts? The wildfire smoke blowing in is a stark reminder that the climate crisis is here. If Trump succeeds in abandoning his duty to curb greenhouse gas emissions, wildfires like this will become more common. I'm suing because we can't wait to act." Oh, my God, this woman is so happy. She's so happy. Mass Daily News says the Commonwealth's chief legal officer, in other words, watched some smoke drift over the state and immediately blamed the president of the United States for it. The wildfire smoke behind the hazy skies over Massachusetts this week is drifting in from Canadian wildfires. Same seasonal pattern that has painted New England skies orange and yellow for several years now. Quebec and Ontario have been burning for weeks. The smoke plumes travel south on the prevailing winds and settle over New England. Meteorologists have been briefing this pattern all summer, which pushes the AG's Trump caused the yellow skies claim well past the boundaries of what even the most climate alarmed academics have been willing to argue in public. Oh, my God. Mass Daily News says Campbell's post did not name the specific lawsuit she was referencing. Her office has joined a long list of multi-state coalition lawsuits against the Trump administration since January, an office activity that has become the day job under the sitting AG, whichever suit she meant. None of them would move the smoke out of the sky over Boston any faster than the wind currently is pushing it. Campbell frequently mentioned in speculation about the 2026 governor's race. I think he meant to say 2028 governor's race has been, no, maybe, yeah, 2026, 2028. This is 2026, right? Anyway, she spent much of her tenure as attorney general suing the federal government. Wednesday's post is the latest example of an office that has increasingly used social media to blame national policies like weather or for local weather. The Facebook post drew more than 800 comments in the first 3 hours. As you can imagine, it would. When you are involved in helping to run one of the most corrupt governments in Massachusetts and nothing that has been done since you came to office and your ilk has come to office, the easiest and most beneficial thing for you to do is to blame President Trump. Now, you know, the thing about these wildfires, two things you got to remember. One of them, the world is not exploding like a match yet because the environment is getting warmer. That doesn't happen. Trees don't burst into flames because of global warming or whatever. The overwhelming majority, almost entirely, fires such as this are triggered by lightning strikes. Always have been. You know, here's the thing. We've had, somebody asked me about this last night. We have had fires on the earth for as long as there has been earth, right? For as long as there have been forests, there have been forest fires. Forest fires, again, are generally triggered by lightning strikes. Sometimes somebody throws a cigarette out the window. Remember Smokey the Bear when we were kids? Only you can prevent forest fires. Sometimes there are other causes. Sparks from trucks with chains and stuff like that can spark a forest fire. They call them wildfires now. They used to be forest fires. When we were kids, they were forest fires. Now they're wildfires. You know, smoking materials being tossed out of a window, a campsite unattended or not entirely put out or whatever. A number of things can cause wildfires. But it's not global warming. Global warming does not. It's like this myth that the Santa Ana wind comes into California with flames and it starts burning everything. And that's not quite how it works. So for Andrea Campbell and people like Andrea Campbell who believe that somehow or another global warming is responsible, you know, a lot of things responsible for forest fires. Couple of the factors that, you know, because we get more coverage of forest fires today than we ever did. And because we see, you know, television and media. In California, for example, when movie stars' homes are burning and other people's homes are burning. I mean, you know, thanks to the fires in L.A. recently, you know, a lot of people's homes burn. But what has happened over the years is that a lot of folks have moved into the woods and into the hills and into places that are normally impacted by fires. People want to live up on the side of the hill and in the woods, and they want all nature and this, that, and the other thing. The other thing is the environmentalists. Have fought every effort to clean out the forests, clean off the kindling on the floor, clean out the dead trees, the dead branches, all this kind of stuff. They like the natural look. And that serves to feed fires. It's fuel for the fires. You know, it's like people move to coastal areas, right? They want to build a house right exactly on the coast of somewhere in Florida. Right, and then they, when the hurricanes come and blow the house down and floods everything, then they turn around and they collect insurance money and build a new house there. And you know, the thing is, you pay and I pay in higher premiums to replace those properties. Same thing with forest fires. It's like people around here, they move out to the woods and they complain, gee, there's mosquitoes out here. Or, oh my God, there's a, you know, there are wild critters that eat my garbage and stuff like that. Well, they were there first. You moved into their territory. But the forest fires, wildfires, they've been a part of the planet since there were trees. So the thought that somehow or another Donald Trump is responsible for wildfires in Canada is just absolutely absurd. But again, it beats talking about the issues, right? It beats talking about why we don't have an audit, why ballot questions were not certified or were kicked off the ballot by the Supreme Judicial Court. Beats having to talk about that, right? All right, we are still awaiting Caroline Lovett. She is due to come to the podium almost any time now. Let me grab a real quick break before that happens. So stay with us. You're listening to WBA.
From the Council of Economic Advisors this morning, more than 6.5 million American children have been signed up for accounts so far, including my two kids, who I signed up during my maternity leave. There are a few things I want to make clear about this massively beneficial program that has the potential to literally transform the financial future of this country. First, any child under the age of 18 is eligible to have a Trump account opened in his or her name. This is a free investment savings account that costs nothing to open. Second, thanks to President Trump, every child born between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028 will receive a $1,000 seed deposit from the United States Treasury. Third, parents, guardians, relatives, and friends can contribute up to $5,000 per year combined for each child. Employers can also contribute up to $2,500 per year on a tax-favored basis, counting toward the annual cap. The president believes there is no better investment than in America's children. Government projections show that a child whose family maxes out contributions could see the account grow to nearly $300,000 by the time the child turns 18. This is, I think we can all agree, an enormously powerful head start toward the American dream. These funds can be used for college, starting a business, or purchasing a home. This is truly a transformational, nonpartisan program. So I encourage everyone listening with a child to establish a Trump account today for your child and tell everyone you know with children to do the same. The app is also incredibly inviting and easy to use for parents at home. Finally, let's turn to the border. Brand new numbers this week from the Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection confirm that for the 14th straight month, this administration has released zero illegal aliens into the United States. Again, let me reiterate, the 14th straight month, not a single illegal criminal alien has been entered into our country, released into our country by this administration. Illegal crossings in June remained at historic lows, and Southwest border apprehensions are down 94% compared to the same period under the Biden administration. These numbers speak for themselves. Thanks to President Trump's strong leadership and unwavering commitment to law enforcement, America has the most secure border we have ever had in our nation's history. The administration continues working to reverse the previous influx of millions of illegal aliens into our country by the Biden administration, and our law enforcement professionals, God bless them, are arresting criminal illegal aliens across the country, including those convicted of the most heinous and violent crimes. This past weekend alone, ICE arrested a Mexican national and gang member convicted of second-degree murder in California, a Dominican national convicted of aggravated manslaughter in New Jersey, a Saudi national convicted of indecent liberties with a child in North Carolina, a Mexican national convicted of continuous sexual abuse of a child in California, a Nicaraguan national convicted of second-degree child molestation in Rhode Island, and a Mexican national convicted of lewd acts with a child under 14 with force in California. These are egregious crimes, and again, I think we can all agree that none of you would want these individuals living in your communities, and you have this administration to thank that they are on their way back home. The American people delivered a decisive mandate to arrest and deport these dangerous criminals, and President Trump is wholeheartedly committed to delivering on that mandate every day. He will never waver in his duty to defend our homeland and protect the American people, and he has proven without a shadow of doubt that the chaos and the lawlessness that we saw every single day at the border and across our country under the Biden administration was a choice. And it is a choice this president has chosen not to make. While this work is far from finished, the border is secure and deportations will continue. With that, I'll take your questions today. I look forward to doing so. I know there's a lot of news. We have two people in our new media seats today, Rachel Bade and Ben Black. Rachel, why don't you kick us off? Ben will give you a question and then we'll We'll get to the rest of all of you. Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks, Caroline. Welcome back to the briefing room. Congrats on your baby.
Thank you.
Two questions.
Sure.
If I may, the first one, a fun one for your first day back. You now have two babies under 2 years old.
I do.
As someone who has a four-year-old, I can only imagine how little you are sleeping right now. What is your one tip or secret to women who want to have it all, the kids and the hard charging career?
Well, thanks for the question, Rachel, and it is really good to be back with all of you. I don't think there is a secret. You just have to show up every day and keep going, and it really does take a village. Take the opportunity to shout out to my husband, who's home with our babies right now. I look forward to returning home later to be with them, but it's a challenging. But for me, I view this as more than job. I view this as public service on behalf of a president who I firmly believe in everything this administration is doing and really creating a better country for my children and their future, and I'm very grateful for that. Blessed to both be working in this job, but also to have two beautiful babies at home. And as you know, Rachel, and any mom in this room knows, there's nothing better than being a mother. So thanks for the question.
Babies are the best. Okay, a question about tonight. There are a lot of Republicans in this town who very much support the SAVE Act and want to make sure, you know, our elections are upheld, election integrity, top priority for them. But some of them are concerned that tonight's primetime address might focus on, you know, elections of the past, relitigating them, rather than voter concerns of today. I'm wondering, can you tell us if the president tonight is going to talk about the economy? You just talked a lot about the economy and what we're seeing there. And what does the White House say to Republicans who are worried that election issues like this could actually turn off swing voters?
Well, a few things. I would encourage everyone to tune in tonight. I've seen a lot of reporting and, frankly, misreporting about what the president will say. I think the American people will be relieved to hear what they are hearing from the president of the United States and his commitment to transparency and the focus on the integrity of our elections tonight. I think all Republicans and Democrats should recognize this should be a nonpartisan issue. If we don't have safe and secure elections in our country, we cannot have a country. It is a vital part of our democracy, of our constitutional republic. The president will be speaking about that tonight. And in addition, at the very same time, of course, he is working on all of these economic issues that the American people have at home. I just read to you the latest inflation numbers are looking good, the best report in 6 years. The president, Republicans and Democrats and all Americans have this president to thank for the largest tax cuts in American history, which every Democrat on Capitol Hill voted against. You have this president to thank for the Trump accounts for our children and the securing the future of the American dream. So this president is doing a lot, but obviously safe and secure elections are a true tenet of our constitutional republic, and the president will be speaking about that tonight.
Thank you.
And Ben, please.
Hey, so I'm from England. I've been following the World Cup all around, absolutely loving it. Unfortunately, we got knocked out last night, so I'd love to ask
you a favor.
Tough day
for you today.
Yeah, it's all good though. But I want to know, so all these football fans coming to America, absolutely having a great time. I've had an amazing time. What do you want these football fans to take away from their time in America?
Sure. Well, I'm so glad you enjoyed your experience here in our country, and sorry for the loss. We look forward to the final match on Sunday, and I know the president looks forward to attending, but I think the world saw that this president and this country is able to put on the greatest show in sports in the world. And we are a kind people, we are hardworking people, and we have the best country on the planet. And I know I've loved seeing the videos from...
Alrighty, welcome back. 1:30, Caroline Leavitt, her press conference. For first press briefing since coming back from maternity leave, and we're looking to see if we can get some kind of a indication of what the president is going to say tonight. As you know, the president is speaking tonight at 9 o'clock to the nation, and there had been some reporting from CNN, MSNBC, MS Now, I think it's called, that this was going to be about the 2020 election. You just heard Carolyn Leavitt's answer to that. So I was hoping we'd get something on the speech tonight, and that's what we got. So I'm not sure whether you plan to watch tonight. I know a lot of folks are going to be in downtown New Bedford until about 8 o'clock tonight. But maybe by 9 o'clock when the president speaks, you'll be at home and you'll be able to listen or watch or whatever. All right, let me grab the break. 508-996-0500. Brian Shortsleeve joins us for a minute or two after the 2 o'clock news, so stick around.
back to Barry Richard on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
All right, welcome back. 1:36 is our time on a Thursday afternoon. 508-996-0500 is the number. So locally, going to be some changes to the Whaling City Festival next year, no doubt about that. Mayor Mitchell, of course, was on with Chris yesterday, and he said he'd like to see the event continue. And but only during the daytime hours, no more going into the night. He said, if I can tell you, I can tell you that there's no way we're going to allow it to stay open after dark, for starters, the mayor said. By the way, there was a piece about all of this. If you didn't hear the mayor yesterday, there's a piece about what the mayor had to say and why he had to say it, and it's all up on WBSM.com. You can go take a look at it. Conversation yesterday during Chris McCarthy's weekly hour with Mayor John Mitchell. Mitchell says he also has plans to meet with the police chief, Jason Thody, the Department of Public Infrastructure, and the park board to discuss the festival moving to another location. Is Buttonwood Park a place where you can adequately secure an event? Are there other places in the city where this could be held? Mitchell said. There aren't a lot of options. There may be a couple of places in the North End. He also said that having the festival at Buttonwood Park, quote, chews up the park pretty well. And he went into the damage that it generally causes with the trucks, and they have to go in and patch it up after it's over. But it's not as simple as throwing it all out, because there are a lot of kids who don't have the opportunity to go to an amusement park, he said. I would like to figure out a way to continue, but it's got to be safe. Whaling City Festival President Michael Sylvia said the festival organizers take safety very seriously and are looking at all potential upgrades. Sylvia conceded that implementing such measures may also mean implementing a nominal fee to enter the feast or enter the festival. Festivals in New Bedford come and go. Festivals everywhere come and go. And I don't know whether the Whaling City Festival, it had a really good run. And then it had some not so good years. We talked about this yesterday. We live in a day and age where we have particularly young people that are completely out of control, do not respect the laws, do not respect our values. And they go to these events and they wreak havoc. And it certainly impacts the families that like to go to these things and enjoy them. Yeah, the mayor made the point, and I made the point yesterday, and we've talked about this before, in past years when there have been problems with the Whaling City Festival. You know, not everybody in New Bedford has the ability, or the New Bedford area has the ability, to put their kids on a plane and take them to Disney, or to drive out to Six Flags New England and Agawam, or maybe go up to New Hampshire to the amusement parks up there. People just not have that ability, some people. And this is something they look forward to every year, bringing the kids to the park to go on the rides and maybe get something to eat or whatever. And so this would be a blow to them if it wasn't there anymore. Certainly the mayor's statement that no more at night, I get it, understand it. Kids, families can certainly adapt to that. You know, you look at social media on this particular post on WBSM.com or some of the others that have been up, and people are trying to draw correlations between the feast of the Blessed Sacrament and this. I mean, they're totally, completely different animals. Completely. And the security situation is completely different. So you can't draw a correlation between that. I guarantee you that if there were stabbings occurring in and around the feast, that there would be some steps taken to try to make that more secure as well. Security has been addressed at the Portuguese feast, and they have not had to charge people money to go in. They have not had to reduce their hours. Security is immense. There are probably as many off-duty officers as there are on-duty. No, I shouldn't say off-duty, but undercover officers as there are officers in uniform walking around that feast grounds. And officers pick up details from all over the area that they work at that feast. And there is monitoring and metal screeners and all kinds of stuff to go through to get into that feast now. It's very difficult to monitor the entire park. It's a wide open park. And so maybe it needs to be in a more confined place. I don't know, going forward, there will be discussions about it. And as soon as we learn more about what's going to happen, we'll let you know. 508-996-0500, you're up next on WBSM. Good afternoon.
Hey, Barry, as you're talking about this, no one talks about option B. Everybody talks about option A, about four fighting and all kinds of security, this and that. And I feel just the opposite. You're not letting that stay open in the evening or early evening, 9 p.m. or so. You're basically caving in to the chaos and the criminals. That's what you're doing. How about we do option B? You said something very, in your little monologue, you said people don't respect the law. Okay, and I agree with you. How about we instill something in these people? How about they fear the law? You know, those juveniles, so if it was the old way, before they got in that cruiser, they'll be beaten down pretty good. Maybe the bats have to come out. Maybe if you know you're going to break the law, pain is going to be involved when you get arrested. How about that idea? It's not police brutality. Once you take out a knife, you are a threat, and you need to put that threat down as hot as possible so that threat doesn't get back up again.
Well, the problem with the knives, though, is you see the knives. The police are dealing with the knife situation after it's happened and everybody's fled the scene except the victims. Look, you know, this is a problem that has many, many layers to it. And the first layer is the parents. And, you know, the parents, when we were younger, mom, dad were going to go to the feast. Yeah, okay. I mean, you're going to go to the Wailing City Festival. Yeah, okay. Well, you're going to be home by a certain time, and you're going to go with your bigger brother, or you're going to go in a group, or this, that, or the other thing. See trouble, you get away from it, and so on and so forth. But I mean, we would never even think of bringing that kind of a problem to a public festival.
And I'm going to defend the parents here, for a second, Barry. And yeah, you're absolutely right. And there's some parents that do their job, and if they do, they're afraid their children might be taken away. I when I was born in the South End, it was mostly all Portuguese. It's my whole street. There was a lot of old school immigrants, okay, old school. We had some kids who didn't listen to their father the way that they should. Unless they get one time, there's this one kid talking back to his father, giving him crap, and here he comes getting his ice cream. That boy came back with such a whipping with the belt. He had lashes all over his legs and everything else.
Yeah.
Okay? It sounds violent, but some boys, sometimes, they don't listen to words.
Even the girls, I mean, today. Physically. Because you know what? The parents, But here's the difference, Paul. Your parents had a certain code of conduct for you when you were a kid. Mine did, too, for me. And you did what you were told because, number one, you feared your parents, which you're supposed to. You love your parents, but you got to fear them also because they are the disciplinary presence in your life, and they are molding you into a decent human being. But you knew the rules, and you understood the rules, okay? And you knew how you behaved. There was a certain conduct of behavior. Now, you know, the thing is, our parents, my mother was like, you know, New Scope 6. She knew who I was with, when I was with them, what they were doing, and I was told, these kids that you're hanging with, you're seeing with, Not anymore. You don't hang with these kids anymore because these are not kids that share our values and these are not kids that, and I don't want to hear this, oh, your mother's a racist and all that. It's nothing like that. It has nothing to do with skin color. It has nothing to do with ethnic background. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with whether the kids are getting in trouble. And they are, you know, behaving in a way that is not, in the same line of thinking that we are. So, they regulated who you hung around with and what you did and where you went and so on and so forth. Today, parents open the door, the kids go out and they roam the streets with whomever they want. And
to a point, but it's also, I know there's some parents out there that some kids are harder than others. And you very well know that some kids push the limits. And in this day and age, some parents who want to be strict, I mean strict, old-fashioned way strict, they're always that concern in the back of the head that kids might be taken away. Yeah. And I say to those people is, let the parents, if the kid has a little bruise in his butt or in his leg from a spanking, so be it. Okay, sometimes corporal punishment is needed on certain children.
But it absolutely is.
You handcuff the parents.
But see, this is why the kids don't fear the parents anymore. They don't fear anybody because you can't do that. You know, DHS will come in and you're in big trouble. But see, the next problem is, so your kid is wandering around out on the streets. Now, I can remember getting in trouble one time. I did something stupid and the cops came, grabbed me by the ear, literally, and dragged me home. And, you know, addressed my parents. Said, this is your kid. I just found him doing this. And my parents thanked them. And they took care of it. When the cop left, they whooped my butt all over the place, and I got punished. I was grounded for 2 weeks. But see, here's the problem. Kids bus kids today. They bring them in. Within an hour, the kids are back on the streets. So not only do the kids not fear their parents, they don't fear the police.
They don't fear the law.
They don't fear the courts because the judges don't hold them. So there's nothing for these kids to fear. And they run around. They play these video games where you shoot at each other and everybody's okay in a half an hour. And they carry guns. They carry knives. And they feel as though they have some kind of right to disrupt normal life out there that the rest of us enjoy. And they do so without any kind of repercussions. And we need to do that. We need to, you know, not only hold parents responsible, we need to have a judicial system that is able to, if you were a kid and you got hauled in front of a judge, if they got that far.
I wouldn't want to go home.
My goodness.
I wouldn't want to go home.
If
that was in my case, I'll plead for the judge not to release me to my parents.
Yeah. So that's the problem that we face. We've got a band of kids that all belong to gangs and gang wannabes and so on and so forth. Then they're roaming the streets. They're not afraid of their parents. They're not afraid of the police. They're not afraid of the judges because they know they'll be back out on the streets in no time. So how do you stop that?
We need to strengthen the law. We need to put teeth behind the law. We need to give cops the discretion they used to have. Not the police brutality. I'm not for that. But the discretion, when it's appropriate, and you get a violent person like that, it's appropriate to maybe use the billy club or a good slap across the head. Maybe it's appropriate to beat it down a little bit because they have to fear the law. Because if you know what happens, innocent people, the good kids, the good families who want to enjoy time at a park, at a festival, at a fair, how about their rights? How about their quality of life? It's just like you said, a lot of these people are fixed incomes. They can't go out to Six Flags and drive that far and pay that kind of money. So that's their little treat. So they should have every right to not even think about anything happening like to them. And if something does break out, the law should be allowed to really clap down hard on them.
What we need to do, particularly in Massachusetts, is we need to elect politicians that are going to elect tough judges. You know, right now we have, but here's the problem with Massachusetts in particular, okay? We're Democrat from top to bottom, right? And these are all liberal Democrats. And you've got the politicians that keep on rising through the ranks up to the governor's ship and the governor's council and all of that kind of thing, the people that appoint these judges. And they are appointing their classmates and their fellow Democrats that are lenient on this kind of thing. You know, they got the social thing going on and they're, legislate from the bench and so on and so forth. So they bring their political policies to the bench. We've got to get rid of all of that. We need to get people on the benches in Massachusetts that are tough on crime, that are going to put the emphasis on the people, the real victims of this, like you say, the families that are being victimized by these folks, that are going to hold not only the kids responsible for what they do, but the parents responsible, and they got to uphold the law. That's what we got to do. We need to get politicians that are going to appoint tough judges that are going to uphold the law. And until we do that, this is just going to continue. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it, my friend. 508-996-0500 is the number. You're up next on WBSM. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Barry.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Well, you know, I have to respectfully disagree with you when it comes to, you know, put everybody in jail, tough judges and all that. I understand where you're coming from, and I know there's sometimes it's a little, but it's not just the politicians. I mean, it's right across the whole country, the whole United States.
Well, you don't think that the punk kids that go to the park and stab people should be put in jail?
No, that's not what I'm saying, Barry. That was going to come out of my mouth. But what I'm trying to convey to you is that sometimes putting people in jail, you know, for certain crimes is warranted. And sometimes, you know, there's bail, and that's why they have all the rest of these things. But it's like a badge of honor to a lot of these kids, you know, to go to jail. So you're not...
Well, that's because we've allowed society to spin out of control to get there. When you were growing up, you didn't pull this crap that these kids are pulling. Why not?
Barry, you know, two of the things you said were correct, like being afraid. But what you left, though, was respect. You know, if...
But that's all part of it. That's part of it. The fear, the respect, the love, that's all part of it. Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, Barry, you know, if kids could fear their father or fear their mother but don't respect everybody else around them, and it makes... And it's obvious, you know, the thing is that, like you probably grew up similar to me, I grew up in a predominantly all Cape Verdean neighborhood. Many, many Cape Verdeans in the same neighborhood. And everybody in my neighborhood and everybody in my surroundings were, if I was three blocks over and was throwing apples at cars, Mary so-and-so would come out and grab me by my ear. And by the time I got home, my mother and father knew what I did. And it'll be the wrath of God on my butt, you know?
Yep.
And those days are over, Barry. If Mary called today, Mary called Mr. Gomes' house and said, hey, I call your son over there, he's doing this thing. Mind your own business, shut your mouth.
But see, you know? That's my point. We need to go back to that, and we can go back to that. We need to have parents. If parents know that they are going to pay a price for their kids running around. Look, you have a kid, you put your kid out on the street, you are responsible for that kid if that kid is a minor. So if that kid is running roughshod through a fair, causing trouble, disrupting stuff, and so on and so forth, you should be responsible for that kid. And then you need the court system to get tougher so that these kids know that there's a price. And I'm not saying throw everybody in jail, but there's got to be a price for your actions. You know, there has to be a consequence for your actions. Just like when we were growing up, we need to go back to that. We have to stop, the kids, the poor kids, and they probably had a dog that had, fleas or whatever, so we can't punish them. No. We have to stop with that. We have to hold people accountable for their actions. And until we do, we're not going to fix this problem. I got to hold you, my friend. I got to get this break in. It's coming up right now on WBS. All right, welcome back. It is 1:58. We're going to head into the newsroom in just a couple of moments. And Brian Shortsleeve will join us on the other side. Of course, Republican candidate for governor. And we are awaiting word as to whether his Republican opponent, Mike Minogue, is going to show for tonight's debate in Taunton. Yours truly will be moderating that debate. And we're waiting to find out what's going to happen. So we're going to talk to Brian for just a couple of moments after the news. Stick around for that. But listen, don't miss the biggest sale yet at Bashan Armaments right now. Say big on top-tier firearms from trusted names like Staccato, SIG P365s, Smith & Wesson, MX Spears, AR-10s, and AK-style rifles. Whether upgrading a collection or purchasing for the first time, this is the perfect opportunity to score unbeatable deals on quality, performance, and reliability. Visit Bashan Armament Corp, CORP.com, or thebashangroup.com to learn more, or stop in today. Bashan Armaments, my good buddy Bill Bashan. Quality, performance, and value. They come standard with Bill. And make sure when you talk to Bill, tell him your good pal Barry sent.